Good morning. Good morning. We have the soul singers here today to lead a whole bunch of songs that you are invited to sing along. And we're going to have words projected up on the wall so you don't have to pull out hymnals or anything. So we're going to start with four short songs that all have kind of repetitive lyrics. You'll be able to jump right in. The first one is one that I learned from my friend Matt Meyer. This is a Bright Morning Star Arisen, slightly different setting than the one that many of you have heard in the past, but we really like this one, so. Here we go.
Bright morning star arisen, bright morning star arisen, bright morning star arisen, day is breaking in my soul. Rise up from morning slumber, rise up from morning slumber, rise up from morning slumber. Day's breaking in my soul.
Hear your calling.
Rise up and hear your calling, rise up and hear your calling, rise up and hear your calling.
Some zipper words in there.
May I be empty and open to receive the light. May I be empty and open to receive. May I be full and open to receive the light. May I be full and open to receive. May and open to receive the light. May I be empty and open to receive. May I be full and open to receive the dark. May I be full and open to receive
to the love.
May I be empty and open to receive. May I be empty and open to receive. May I be full and open to receive the love. May I be full and open to receive.
Okay. This next one, this is the moment from the Peace Poets. We're going to take a little time just to teach it to you, and then we'll sing it a couple more times through. So if Margo, if you can throw the words up there, this is the whole song. So I'll sing two lines, you sing them back. This is a moment, put down what you're holding.
This is a moment, put down what you're holding.
Everything is changing, listen to the wind.
Everything is changing, listen to the wind.
And when you hear it, You don't have to fear it.
And when you fear it, you don't have to fear it.
Now's the time for healing everything you love.
Now's the time for healing everything you love.
Here's the whole thing. This is a moment. Put down what you're holding.
Everything is changing. Listen to the wind. And when you hear it, you don't have to fear it. Now's the time for healing everything you love.
Do it again.
This is the moment. Put down what you're holding. Everything is changing. Listen to the wind. And when you hear it, you don't have to fear it. Now's the time for healing everything you love.
One more time.
This is the moment. Put down what you're holding. Everything is changing. Listen to the wind. And when you hear it, you don't have to fear it. Now's the time for healing everything you love.
You guys are awesome. You should all come at 5:30 every Monday night, 5:30 over in Memorial Room, and come sing with us. We do this every week. So we got one more song.
I need my guitar.
My roots go down. You'll pick up this one really easy.
My roots go down, down into the earth. My roots go down, down into the earth. Go down, down into the earth, my roots go down. My roots go down, down into the earth. My
pause from the chaos of the world this morning to reclaim the beauty within this place, the beauty that carries us through the week. And we lift this community onto our shoulders with pride and grace-filled expectations for our children and our children's children. Come, let us worship together.
I invite you to center your breath by singing Meditation on Breathing. If you want to look in the turquoise hymnal, it's number 1009, but the words will be up there. Breathe in. Breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. When I breathe in,
and keep breathing and sit down, please. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to First Unitarian. I'm Anna Watkins, and I am pleased to include you in the service. We are glad you're here, whether you're in the sanctuary or the fellowship hall. Families, we welcome you and your children this morning. And if there's any children, thank you for bringing your parents here. There are a lot of options for your comfort described in the order of service, so don't be shy about moving around to take advantage of them. Take a moment now to look around and see who else is here this morning, people you know and those who are new to you. Wow, look at, apparently there was an attractiveness requirement this morning. Yeah? Okay. Know that others are glad to see you and that we all belong together. Today, I am honored to introduce Heather Vickery, our guest speaker. Heather is the coordinator for congregational activism at the UU Service Committee and, as such, works with congregations, state action networks, and other groups that want to do their social justice work more effectively and faithfully. She is part of the Congregational Accompaniment Project for Asylum Seekers, that's CAPAS, a team that matches and supports congregations with asylum seekers needing sponsorship, and she coordinates with UUSC's frontline trans partners working to get our beloveds free and safe through the Pink Haven Coalition. Heather also co-coordinates the Beyond Bond and Legal Defense Fund, which is part of the wider Boston Immigration Justice Accompaniment Network in Massachusetts. She is an active member of her UU church, First Parish Malden, and an aspirant to UU ministry. Welcome, Heather. I look forward to hearing her again. And now I share the words of the positive psychologist, Robert Holden, for all of us. The joy you seek is in you now. In this sacred space, let us flow out that joy with kindness, compassion, and love for all.
And I'm glad that you quoted a positive psychologist, because that's a great field of study. It's all about what makes people thrive and be happy versus what is all the psychological stuff that can go, you know, haywire, which we know a lot about too, right? The field of positive psychology has, you know, done a lot of research about what makes people thrive and be happy. And some of the things they've found that contribute to that are community and gratitude practices and mindfulness. So let's do all of those at once right now. How about that? I invite you to prepare your body and mind for meditation. Do a little stretch if you want to. Resettle in that seat so that you're comfortable or as comfortable as you can be at this moment. And just be held. That's our first gratitude. Being able to just be held in this safe and warm place. And notice your breath. Breathing in, feeling your diaphragm expand. Or feeling your lungs expand, I guess, with your hand over your diaphragm if you want. And notice gratitude for the air, for the oxygen, which has circled and circled the planet so many times, giving life to everything, and now to you. And bring your awareness to what a special thing it is to sit in a moment of meditation in a room full of people. Everyone breathing. Everyone gathering for community today. Give thanks for each other. And as we continue in stillness, when you notice your mind wandering, just gently bring it back. Let's lift up some prayers in our community. From my pastoral list, I lift up Elise Frumkin, who is seeking answers about her health this week. May she find the information and support she needs to be well, receive good care. I lift up all the students who will be making a vow of silence for one day this Friday to bring attention to anti-LGBTQ+ bullying. May their day be effective in its quiet strength. I know you bring many names in your hearts, people and places that are on your minds. I invite you to call them to mind now and speak them aloud as the chime rings so that we can hold them with you. All of these beloved people and places, all of the named and unnamed prayers we lift up to the great powers of healing and renewal and celebration that we call by many names. Will you join me in a spirit of prayer? Spirit of life, love that holds all, thank you. Thank you is the first and most important prayer. Thank you for the morning, for the sunlight, for another day of living, and for all of the possibilities this day contains, seen and unseen. Thank you for all of the people who have gathered this morning to breathe and dream and seek and celebrate together. Thank you for the people who come together to make this world a better place, to create networks of safety, to provide refuge, to lift up voices, to advocate. Thank you for the earth around us, reminding us of our place in this world, which is humbling. Thank you, and also help us, please. We need help to have the courage to face each day, especially when our prayers of gratitude feel out of reach. We need help reaching out to the person we see who is also praying thank you and help, and who would be a companion in life's journey if we just knew each other better. We need help when illness, crisis, grief, or other painful things sweep us off our feet. We need help and comfort when our loved ones are lost. And we need tenderness. May love pour down on each person gathered here this morning and bring them peace. And may we each help to make it so through our own manner of being in this world. Amen. And peace be with you.
Today I offer this reading called Troublemaker Blessing, which is adapted from Lori Stevens and Cody Hooks. We are the holy troublemakers, the mystics and the misfits, the doubters and devil worshipers, the Afro-futurists and magical realists, the so-called heretics, heathens and hedonists. Hell, even the kinks and trekkies fit under this sparkly umbrella. No category can contain us. We're basically everything else. We're the pesky shadow sewn to the feet of all great traditions, teachings, and institutions. We embody the eternal unknown, the stubborn mysteries, the uncontrollable forces of nature. We are human prisms breaking plain white light into a riot of color. the monsters under the bed who remind you that there's as much to be learned from the sacred darkness as there is the light. We are the mischievous seekers who demand to know why, how come, and what's the point. Our only doctrine is that no truth is the whole truth. No one way is the right way. We celebrate the queers, the forbidden lovers, the shapeshifters, the box breakers. Thank you for creating the unimaginable just by being your outrageous selves. We celebrate the pagans, the witches, folk healers, midwives, and death doulas, those whose allegiances is first and foremost to this dirty, bloody, beautiful planet Earth. Thank you for keeping humanity's feet on the ground and our eyes on the stars. We celebrate the atheists, agnostics, and non-believers. Thank you for laughing at the powerful and for doubting absolutely everything with such gleeful fierceness. We invite all to plant the ancient seeds of questions. May they bloom into fabulous futures. Bless the world with your unique imperfections, your change, your holy failure, your sacred resurrections. May you wake every morning with stardust in your eyes. O little universe, may you love forever. Good morning, friends. I am so happy to be here with you all on this Sunday As an aspirant for UU Ministry and in my role as coordinator for congregational activism at UUSC, I get to preach in a lot of different UU congregations, and let me tell you, each congregation does things a little bit differently, which makes sense. I mean, we UUs are kind of known for loving to argue and disagree about practically anything. There are even UU jokes about it. Some of my favorites are, a Unitarian Universalist died and to his surprise discovered that there was indeed an afterlife. The angel in charge of these things told him, because you are an unbeliever and a doubter and a skeptic, you will be sent to hell for all eternity, which in your case consists of a place where no one will disagree with you ever again. Second one, visitors on a tour of heaven noticed a group of Unitarian Universalists who were arguing about whether or not they were really there. And the third and last, a visitor to a Unitarian Universalist church sat through the sermon with growing incredulity at the heretical ideas being spouted. After the sermon, a UU asked the visitor, "So how did you like it?" "I can't believe half the things that minister said," sputtered the visitor in outrage. "Oh, good, then you'll fit right in." Honestly, I love pretty much all UU jokes, but especially the ones about how much we love to argue and disagree about things. We have 8 principles and an infinite number of ways to interpret them. We agree on a lot, but love to get into the nitty-gritty about what we aren't so sure of. And I think we can all agree that as a faith, we actually like being unsure. We lean into it, and that's a really beautiful thing. We understand that we're a learning and not a learned faith, and that healthy disagreement produces growth and keeps us from being dogmatic about the things that we, and in fact no one, can know for sure. However, there's one thing that solidly connects all UUs. In every single congregation, there is a chalice, and that chalice is lit to begin worship. Now you might be thinking, I thought this worship was going to be about how our faith calls us to support our trans beloveds in these times of fascist threats against their humanity. The chalice and UU jokes don't have anything to do with that. Well, first, to come full circle, I disagree. And second, I promise I will explain more, and maybe something that never happens in a UU service will happen today. You all will end up agreeing with me. It's the chalice itself, the very thing that binds all UUs together, that most strongly calls us to the work of resisting the criminalization of our trans and gender-expansive beloveds. You see, our chalice, as sacred as it is to us today, wasn't always the symbol of the Unitarian and Universalist faiths. In 1940, Reverend Dr. Charles Rind Joy was sent by the newly created Unitarian Service Committee, the predecessor of the current UUSC, to Lisbon, Portugal, which was the only open port in Europe at the time and was where many of the refugees were going to flee the Nazi regime. Many of those refugees had to flee without any of the identification papers that were required to cross borders. So Joy decided to start making identification papers issued by the USC itself. This was uncharted waters, but instead of focusing on the risks that he and the organization might be taking by doing this, Joy focused on saving the lives of those fleeing fascism. He also decided that those papers needed a seal to look as official as other travel papers, and so he asked Hans Dutsch, an Austrian refugee and artist working in Lisbon, to create one, and the result was the basis of the Flaming Chalice, as we now know it. So while this was happening, by the way, Waitzel and Martha Sharp were also sent to Europe by the USC, and they not only falsified documents to get people out, but also laundered money. So you see, the thing that binds us all as Unitarian Universalists together, the chalice, was founded on our commitment to human rights and to fighting fascism. Since the founding of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, we've been committed to supporting the work of liberation, even when, and maybe especially when, it involves making holy trouble for the powers that would deny anyone's full humanity. Okay, I'm going to invite you to take a nice deep breath now. This is where we get into the heavy stuff. So I want to invite you all to do whatever you need to care for yourselves and stay grounded as we proceed. If you need to stand up and stretch, walk to the back of the sanctuary, look at your phones, yes, even that, please listen to your body's needs and follow them. I promise I will not be insulted. Talking about the present nature of fascism in our country can be incredibly triggering for anyone. To my trans and queer family in the room, this invitation especially goes out to you. And although I will invite you to take deep breaths throughout our time together, please breathe in between those reminders too. To understand what fascism is, I want to reference the work of Jason Stanley, who is the author of How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Stanley is a professor and scholar of philosophy and propaganda at Yale. He describes fascism as an ideology, but also, and perhaps more importantly, as a political method. Not all who use fascist tactics are ideologically fascists. We recognize fascists less by their beliefs than by their methods. I'm going to share Stanley's overviews of the 10 tactics of political fascism, and what I'm sharing with you now is taken directly from Stanley's work, at times word for word from a video lecture he gave titled The 10 Tactics of Fascism, which is available on YouTube if you're interested in learning more. So Stanley opens that by explaining that these 10 tactics are bundled, that they can't be isolated from each other. The first tactic is the creation of a mythic past. Fascists always present the idea that there was once a glorious past. In politics, this is presented in the idea that we were once a great nation. Notice the past tense. And when we were great, the dominant group ruled over others. Now that's been taken away, not lost by our own actions, but taken away by some group designated as other. Jason Stanley says fascists are always telling a story about a glorious past that's been lost, and they tap into that nostalgia. So when you fight back against fascism, you've got one hand tied behind your back because the truth is messy and complex. And the mythical past is always clear and compelling and entertaining. So it's hard to undercut with facts. The second tactic is propaganda. Now, all social movements and all politics use propaganda to persuade. Fascist propaganda, however, makes a distinction between friends and enemies. It casts the other as a threat and presents the idea that these others are fundamentally opposed to the nation. They're un-American, maybe. Tactic number three is anti-intellectualism. Authoritarianism presents a cult of the leader. In a fascist system, the leader and only the leader sets the rules about what is true or false. So we see the takeover of the country's media, schools, and cultural institutions to enforce what the leader says is true. Institutions that teach multiple perspectives on history always threaten the leader. Expertise threatens the leader. Science threatens the leader. If intellectuals are telling the truth, they are a threat. So anti-racism, critical race theory, definitely a threat. This brings us directly to tactic number four, the creation of a form of unreality. The scholar Timothy Snyder talks about this a lot, the destructions of notions of reality. Authoritarians undermine what we know to be true and convince the population that A, everyone is lying, and B, that lies don't matter. In political terms, the center of democracy is truth. You can't function as a democratic citizen if you're being lied to. The fifth tactic of fascism is hierarchy. Hierarchy is absolutely central to fascism. It is the big lie at the center of things. White supremacy, male supremacy, able-bodied supremacy, these lies assign people superiority and the privileges and benefits that go with that superiority. Hierarchy goes right into the sixth tactic, victimhood. Once you've convinced people that they are justifiably higher in the hierarchy, then you can convince them that they're victims of equality. Fascists tell people that equality is victimizing them by making them lose their rightful place of power. Stanley says the goal is to make people feel like victims, to make them feel like they've lost something, and that the thing they've lost has been taken from them by a specific enemy, usually some minority outgroup or some opposing nation. According to Ajeris Dixon, writing in Truth Out, fascists believe that democracy has failed them and allowed the majority to be tyrannized by communities that have no right to power. Therefore, fascists seek to eliminate both democratic processes and marginalized communities to return to an often fictitious and glorified past where their power reigned unchecked. The seventh tactic is law and order. Under fascism, the definition of law-abiding means loyalty to the dominant group. Members of the dominant group are, by their very nature, seen as law-abiding. Marginalized groups are seen by their very nature as not being law-abiding. And law and order has nothing to do with justice or equality. Law and order structures who is legitimate and who is not. And law and order will ultimately be enforced by violence. Tactic 8 is sexual anxiety. In every case, across different cultural and historical settings, the fascist leader will say, "Your women and children are under threat. You need a strong man to protect your families." Fascists make conservatives overwhelmingly terrified of transgender rights and queer people and their families. According to fascists, these targeted groups are not simply trying to peacefully live their own lives, they're trying to destroy the majority's life, and they're coming for the majority's children. Tactic 9 is called Sodom and Gomorrah. Fascist movements typically rest on an urban-rural divide, and fascists use the toxic trope of the biblical story of Sodom and Gomorrah. In this trope, pure, hard-working, real members of the nation live in rural societies, where they work hard with their hands. But when politicians talk about inner-city voters or urban voters, we all know what they mean. Black and queer folks, immigrants, Jews, and other people that fascists seek to control or eliminate. The 10th and final tactic is what Stanley, a child of Holocaust survivors, calls Arbeit macht frei. Work shall set you free. Those words were hung over the gates at Auschwitz. Fascists create an idea that minorities, immigrants, and others are lazy, that these groups need to be taught a work ethic. The mechanism they use is forced labor, whether it's prison labor or work requirements for benefits. The targeted groups must provide free labor as a supposed moral education. According to fascists, labor unions are supposedly run by communists who are trying to make things easier for lazy people. College students who protest conservative speakers are described as lazy, spoiled kids who need to get a real job. The thing is, the end game in this calculation is pure evil. Valuing people by how hard they work means that the elderly, disabled, and even children become disposable. The Nazis murdered these groups first because they believed that those who could not work had no value. Is it any wonder that we're now seeing the repeal of child labor laws in this time of rising fascism? Those are Stanley's 10 tactics of fascism, very long quote over. Now I invite you to again take a nice deep breath. No doubt you recognized many, if not all, of those tactics at work today in the United States and around the world. Currently in the US, anti-LGBTQ rhetoric and legislation seems to be one of the few issues that brings disparate factions of conservatives together, and right-wing politicians are leaning in hard. 38 states currently have anti-transgender legislation on their books, with the number of new bills growing by the day. The ACLU is currently tracking 484 anti-LGBTQI bills that are in process for the 2024 legislative session in various states, and most of them are anti-trans laws. There are also 38 federal laws being proposed. These bills threaten our trans and gender expansive beloveds in many ways. Three of the most stark ways are through trans genocide, through legal definitions, which seek to erase trans folks from public life and remove any legal protections they may have. The expansion of anti-LGBTQ propaganda laws, which apply to libraries, schools, and the internet. And child custody and removal laws that would allow states or other family members to take children from trans parents or from parents who are honoring their children's gender identities. The lies and misinformation surrounding these bills are abhorrent. These bills are trying to legislate trans and queer people out of existence. And please know this is not hyperbole. We know that this is the ultimate goal as well because of Project 2025, which is the right's published plan to reshape the executive branch if they win the next presidential election. One of their first acts would be to institute a nationwide don't say gay policy through executive order. Because of these laws, trans people in the United States now meet the definition of internally displaced peoples by the United Nations. Hundreds of thousands of people have already fled their homes to safer states, with more than 1 million considering doing so. So let's take another deep breath together. There are so many questions we can ask ourselves in light of the current situation. What do we do? Who do we want to be? How can we resist and find joy even in times like these? And I think many of us have looked back at times like the Holocaust and have thought, if I was there, I would have done something. Well, folks, we're there. What is the something we are going to do? What is the something you are going to do? Early in 2023, an organization led by trans activists approached UUSC and asked if we could help trans folks relocate to safer states. They saw the work that UUSC was doing with congregations and supporting asylum seekers and wondered if UUs had the networks, infrastructure, and desire to support a different kind of asylum seeker, ones driven from their US-based homes and communities. In this work being led by trans activists, we are in an interfaith coalition with Quakers, Jews, Mennonites, the United Church of Christ, and more. We're exploring partnerships with mutual aid networks, labor unions, and anyone else who is saying, no, I won't let this happen, not on my watch. We're working together to create networks of safety and direct support for trans beloveds and their families who need to relocate, access healthcare across state lines, or stay as safe as possible where they are. Because of safety concerns for these trans organizers and the people they're serving, we're prioritizing their security above all, which is allowing us to move together in deep trust during these crucial, frightening times. This is why I'm not sharing the name of the organization that's leading this work, or the organizers, or any passengers or specifics. Instead, we've come up with a stage name, Pink Haven Coalition, to talk about this work. Acting in coalition together for trans liberation is a direct antidote to rising fascism that we see not only in the United States, but throughout the world. Whenever we resist fascism and injustice, we weaken them everywhere. Know that as you support our trans and gender expansive beloveds to not just survive, but thrive, you are also supporting all others that are targeted by fascism, and you're helping to heal the world from the sin of dehumanization and oppression. So here are three important ways that you can get involved in this critical life-saving work and support trans liberation. The first is get involved as a volunteer. We are looking for folks to be part of villages of support. We need hosts to offer space in their homes, and we need volunteers to provide support in navigating government programs, accessing healthcare, finding employment, and establishing social connections. By joining forces, we can provide a safer exodus and a welcoming community for those settling in safer states, including your own New Mexico. You can make a gift. These efforts to support our trans beloveds require financial resources. Your contributions will help us address the practical needs of those seeking sanctuary, respond to their immediate needs, and set them up for success in their new lives. The First Parish in Malden, Mass. Has generously offered to act as a fiscal sponsor for this work. Please know that all donations in their entirety are moving directly into the hands of those trans-led organizers and being used to support trans and non-binary people in accessing the resources and support they need to survive and thrive. If you can, I encourage you to give as abundantly and courageously as you are able by visiting pinkhaven.org and clicking donate. I also have QR codes outside in the social hall. And third, skill up. We're all in different places in our justice journeys, and that's okay. Some of us here are trans or gender expansive, and this is your lived reality. Others of us may be new to the wonderful world that waits beyond the gender binary. For those of us who may not understand all the terms and complexities of gender and maybe worry about not knowing what to say or about saying the wrong thing, I urge you to lean into your discomfort and support these folks anyways. Explore resources that increase your competency in this arena. Starting next week, there will be a series of classes held by TGRC here that can get you started on that path. Also, feel free to reach out to me. I would be happy to provide any resources. In fact, nothing would make me happier. Join me during coffee hour to chat about the work. Stay for an information session town hall that we're doing after worship today at 12:30, and build relationship. Start wherever you are. We welcome you in the work. Friends, the forces of fascism in our nation and in others around the world are only going to grow more brazen in their quest for power. It's up to us to pay attention, disrupt the violence, and remain true to who we are as justice-loving people of faith. As the late John Lewis advised, do not get lost in a sea of despair. Do not become bitter or hostile. Be hopeful. Be optimistic. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in good trouble, necessary trouble. We will find a way to make a way out of no way. So I am calling all of you holy troublemakers to join us, to rise up and say, we will not fall in line. We will not let this happen. We will make so much holy, troublesome noise that we will drown out the sounds of hate and fear and fascism. Together, we can and will find a way out of no way. Now is the time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. Amen, ashe, and let it be so.
And the noise begins. Let's get loud, let's get loud. I'll dance to that later. Okay. Heather referenced the wonderful John Lewis, and so will I. Whatever good work you do, whatever powerful, profound work, do it because it's right or because it's necessary. Do it to make change for the better. Now is the time for us to participate in that change for the better. Our offering ritual lets us show gratitude for our church, its inspiration and service to us as individuals, and for nurturing a beloved community for all. To expand the range of our mission, we work in harmony with specific local organizations. Our Change for the Future partner this quarter is United Voices for Newcomer Rights. This organization works in partnership with newcomers, empowering them to cultivate educational, economic, cultural, social, and physical and mental health resources. That's a lot of stuff. And I want you to think of that term, newcomer, very broadly. You may mark a pew envelope CFF or place coins in the basket to benefit this organization. And we will now gratefully accept the offering for our partner and for this church.
Did you all know that the Soul Singers are our pastoral care choir, and they visit people in times of sadness or illness and sing like that wherever they are? Isn't that wonderful? Thank you so much for your generosity. Thank you on behalf of the congregation and on behalf of our Change for the Future partner. May these gifts be for blessing in and beyond these walls. And thank you also to anybody who's able to give to Pink Haven Coalition. That was pinkhaven.org, right? I'm going to make a gift to that group. I hope that if you have financial resources to share for this work, you will too. We have some invitations to share. Anna's going to go first.
Okay. The Arts and Aesthetic team is opening a new art show today featuring the work of church member Audrey McDonald. You so have to see this. You have to see it. Oh. Audrey died earlier this year and was remembered at a memorial service yesterday. So please come by and take a look. Also, join the Welcoming Congregation Renewal Team next Sunday at 12:15 p.m. in the Memorial Hall for a transgender cultural fluency training with Adrian Lawyer, which lays the foundation for participants to gain a better understanding of what it means to be transgender, clarify common misconceptions about trans people, become familiar with the challenges they face, and learn ways to be a strong and engaged advocate. This is the first of three workshops coming up.
Adrian's a good teacher. I've been to that workshop twice over the years and learned things both times, so definitely invite everybody to come. Heather mentioned that we're going to have a town hall at 12:30. That's across the courtyard in Memorial Hall, where you can learn some more about the work that's needed to establish the safety. And I'll be there. We'd love to see as many folks as possible for that. Between now and then, between 12 and 12:30, there's coffee hour down in the social hall. So you're invited to stay, enjoy a cup of coffee. There will be a chat table if you like to have a little bit more of a guided conversation. And here is a discussion question, whether you're at the table or somewhere else. What gifts do you have for this kind of work that Heather described? Sometimes with such a big problem, it can feel overwhelming, but nobody has to do everything. What helps the most is if we all do something with the gifts that we each have. Are you someone who knows a lot of people and can make introductions? Do you have financial resources? Do you have space to share? Do you have an Airbnb that can be taken offline for a while and shared? All of those kinds of questions. What are your strengths? Do you know how to navigate systems in New Mexico, like getting health insurance and getting a driver's license and all that kind of thing? All that work. Everybody has gifts. So there's your question. And in a second, I'm going to invite us to stand up as in body or spirit and greet each other. But first, I want to invite a few special people to stand up or raise their hand. These are new members who just joined today. So if you're here, are Elena and Cheryl and Janice G and Taryn. Edna, Sharon, and Jan. Wow, welcome. We are so glad you're here. Welcome to the congregation. Welcome into this community. Everyone, please rise in body or spirit and greet one another with our gesture of peace, especially these new ones. Welcome. Peace.
You to rise, remain risen, and join us in our closing hymn. We're going to throw the words back up there, but if you want to look at the book, it's number 1007 in the turquoise book, and we'll have the lyrics up there. There's a river flowing in my soul, and it's telling me that I'm somebody. We somehow lost our front projector, so. Okay, so it's number 1007.
There's a river flowing.
There's a river. do soul one more time.
There's a
I leave you with this benediction by Elena Westbrook. Go in hope, for the arc of the universe is long, and we can bend it towards justice. Go in courage, for together we have the strength to confront injustice in our daily lives and the larger world. Go in love, because a holy and generous love is both the reason and the means by which we transform our lives. Thank you.